The Guardian.
Support for this podcast comes from Squarespace, the all-in-one platform that makes creating a professional website for your business, personal brand, or portfolio so easy, it's newsworthy. Go to squarespace.com and use the offer Guardian to get 10% off.
World Cup Football Daily with James Richardson.
July the 4th, first game sees few fireworks, but a Maracanã without tears for Germany, while in the other, Brazil leave Fortaleza beaming, while Hammers may need Fortaleza surgery after getting a hammering. Saturday, Costa Rica, Netherlands, Argentina, Belgium are your games. We got them on today's World Cup Football Daily. My word, the German fans certainly know how to celebrate. Hey, James.
Yeah, I'm just Braukeller.
Right. Hey, do you ever do commentary on Dutch television?
Why, isn't it Scandinavian? I don't know. I mean, yeah, people got confused.
James Horncastle in the house, as is John Ashton.
Hi there.
What a delightful house it is there. Now, how are you, John?
I'm good, yeah. Feeling happy?
Yeah, you've had a...
Looking forward to getting my hands on a Frankfurter.
Oh, right, because you just had a couple of... I'm going to say quarter pounders, but that doesn't really...
Let's be frank.
Nearly works.
Yeah?
Nearly works, yeah.
Right. Two games, as you probably spotted. Brazil-Colombia and France-Germany. Let's start with the late game, the Brazil-Colombia. Extraordinary, extraordinary stuff. 2-1. It sure wasn't pretty.
No, it was not at all yoga bonito, was it? It was... Well, what's Brazilian for ugly football?
Jogo feio.
Okay, that'll do. I mean, Brazil's main game plan seemed to be to kick James Rodriguez out of the game, which they did for an hour or so.
Rodriguez on the receiving end, not seen a pummeling severe since the start of Robocop, as you put it earlier today.
Yeah, good line that. And it worked up to a point, although, you know, it was a stop-start affair, and eventually, I mean, Rodriguez was brilliant. Despite all the attention his knees were getting.
Despite the locust on his shoulder as well.
Yeah,
James was there, he said, look at that thing he's got on his shoulder. I thought, oh my God, is it Suarez again or something?
Yeah. Maybe that's his metamorphosis.
Oh, perhaps.
Could, yeah.
Kafka. Yeah. Sorry, John.
But Brazil did enough. I thought they were probably the better team.
Mm-hmm.
If you sort of look back, I don't think Julio Cesar made any saves of note.
Hmm.
Whereas Ospina was fairly busy, it wasn't an attractive performance, but it was good enough, I think.
Yeah, I think among neutrals, concerns were the refereeing that allowed so many fouls, particularly on Colombia and Rodriguez, to go unchecked, and there were some questions over the goal that was disallowed for Colombia, but I think the offside flag was up on that before the ball was in the net. But also, a lot of people asking why Judas Cesar didn't get the red card for his clattering tackle that led to the penalty.
Yeah, I think there were a lot of those decisions. I mean, Fernandinho and Paulinho should have both been in the book first half, I think. And there was two or three other challenges from Brazilian players that you could argue were yellow cards. I think there's some debate about whether the foul from Rodriguez prior to David Luiz's free kick was actually a free kick. I think it was, although it was a little bit harsh for him to go in the book, considering the kicking that he'd got. You could argue that David Luiz was sweeping up sort of behind Cesar for his foul for the penalty, but I think that's a red card. I think if, you know, that's on another day, that's a sending off. So, the referee was a bit of a homer, wasn't he? He was a bit of a...
And not Nishimura. For the first time. Yeah. Because, well, you mentioned the referee from the opening game against Croatia. And how far have Brazil come? What's been their journey from there to here?
I think probably tonight was their best performance. But they're still an unconvincing bunch. I don't think they'd be particularly worthy champions. I think were they to go into any other tournament that wasn't their own, i.e. them being the hosts, you'd look at them and think there's not much to them beyond Neymar. Having said that, you know, Julio Cesar had a very good game in their last knockout tie against Chile. David Luiz stood up, played really well today, scored the winning goal. And Thiago Silva, who came in for a lot of criticism before this game for being too emotionally involved not to take a penalty. He got the first goal, which was kind of a narrative goal. It had to be him in many respects. But as a whole, you look at them and you think, well, from a German perspective, I'd be quite confident that they could knock them out. Was it not for home advantage, which I do think has, as we've seen with the refereeing, but also with the kind of atmosphere created at these grounds. But they'll be without Thiago Silva, who'll be suspended, and Neymar went off looking very badly. Well, not badly injured, but in a bad way.
Didn't you find that bizarre that he was down with a back injury and clearly in an awful lot of pain, and they just sort of flopped him onto the stretcher? Yes. No sort of spinal board or a neck brace or anything like that. Sort of jogging him off, jumping him around. It looked very, very odd. I mean, I'm obviously hopefully he's fine and there wasn't any sort of serious damage, but I don't think it would have helped.
There might be chiropractors, because you know how they like to kind of mangle the body. They might have just clicked it back way. But there is this amazing stat. They haven't lost Brazil a competitive game on home soil since 1975, when Pele was still playing, remarkably enough. But enjoy that stat while ye may, because, as you say, next up it is Germany. And they could well be facing, if not without Neymar, then with possibly Neymar not at 100%, and certainly without Thiago Silva, who's suspended.
Yeah, and I think one of the encouraging things from a German point of view today was the control of their midfield, of Kadira, Schweinsteiger and Kroos. Whereas with Brazil tonight, without Luis Gustavo, it was a bit fast and loose at times. They didn't seem to be able to take a hold of the game, and dictate the tempo. And I think that, obviously, he will be back, I assume. Maybe that will improve from them. But that inability to really grab onto a game and hold onto it, rather than, as we've seen in a lot of Brazil games, there tends to be this sort of spells where they lose their shape, they panic a little bit, the occasion gets to them, and they've ridden that out so far. But how long can they keep doing that?
Well, let's talk a little bit now about the other quarterfinal. This felt a little bit like duty and pleasure. The game this evening, while a little bit ugly, as you say, was an exciting game to watch. The other one was something that, you did because you had to.
Yeah, I mean, this evening, for all its kind of bad points tonight, it was fun.
Yeah.
It was 90 minutes of entertainment. And France and Germany wasn't. No, it was nearly as dull as Roger Federer's straight sets wins over Milos Raonic in tennis.
Well, the commentators and analysts were using words like intriguing and absorbing, which was a bit of a giveaway.
Yeah, a Roy Hodgson probably go down well in his household.
But 1-0 anyway to Germany. Mats Hummels with the early goal, which pretty much determined the thing, but it also determined the way the two sides approach things and all that kind of thing. There have been some question marks over Germany as well, the way that they were approaching this World Cup, their level. Raphael Honigstein wasn't terribly positive ahead of the tournament, but he was commenting afterwards that this looked like a proper, what he would call the Turniermannschaft, a tournament team again. John, did you think that?
Yeah, I think there's an element of that. I mean, Yogi Löw afterwards said the way he described the team after the victory was that it has intrinsic qualities and that it's solid and stable, which isn't the most exciting way to describe your World Cup semi-finalist team, but it's an accurate one, isn't it? They do look like they know how to get the job done, and they had France, I thought, at arm's length for most of the afternoon.
Well, he certainly did. Well, certainly Hummels had Varane at arm's length, notably. But, speaking of post-game comments, let's catch up with Raphael Honigstein himself.
Hello.
Woo! Where are you?
I'm outside the Maracanã.
You're outside the Maracanã?
Yes.
But you're not outside the World Cup, are you? Unlike the French.
Boom, tish.
Yep. Tell you what, you sound almost excited to be out of there, Rafa. How was the game for
you? I'm happy, very happy.
Yeah, of course. I mean, it's a great result for Germany.
The game was obviously not, I think, a spectacle for the neutrals. But it was the sort of performance that as a German fan, you wanted to see. It was very controlled, very mature. Of course, the early goal really helped.
Say efficient.
I think France
say efficient.
Has a game plan that was based on finding the strikers with over-the-top balls and being cute on the counter-attack. But, of course, if you go down 1-0 after 12 minutes, you're in a very bad position, especially in a stifling heat. It was really, really hot out there.
Mm.
And I don't know if you saw Thomas Müller came out with this brilliant line saying, it felt like in a barbecue shack, now I really respect a cactus. I can appreciate a cactus.
All right.
And it's amazing that they don't, how they can survive in the heat.
Well, yeah, mainly because they don't run around, and they particularly don't run around more than 7.5 kilometres more than their opponents. So that's extraordinary. Even though Germany didn't look like they were really pushing it, they looked like they had, if you will, extra gears, they still comfortably outplayed the French. What did you make of Deschamps' side?
I think you could see that they didn't have that one special player in midfield who could actually create things. I think this was a side built on pace, on power, on transition football. But when you're 1-0 down and Germany just were able to sit, not deep, but, you know, with a lot of people behind the ball, they just didn't have a way through. They didn't have enough creativity in the side.
They didn't have.
And ultimately, they looked very meek. But I think it also had to do with the heat and playing against the Germany side with a 1-0 lead, who looked very comfortable and happy with their formation. I think it was always going to be very difficult for them.
Right. They didn't have a Ribéry. They didn't arguably have a Nasri. But even without that, right at the death, they could have snatched an equaliser had it not been for the iron fist of Manuel Neuer.
Yeah. The thing is, what I liked about the save is that he made it look as if he was just sort of raising his hand to hail a cab or something. So nonchalant. And he was superb throughout. And you wonder if he gets to the stage where opposition strikers think, you know, oh no, there's Neuer in goal. I have to do something very special to beat him. He's been in fantastic form, and he's so important with the high line that Germany do play, that they have played as well today, to have somebody behind them who can play as well. Oliver Bierhoff had a good line. He said, yeah, well, Manuel Neuer is good at everything. He's good at cards, he's good at snooker. Whatever he does, he's good at. He's got the game intelligence, and he often plays outfield in training, and I think to have somebody like that behind you is a huge bonus for any back four.
Okay, what about the semi-final then with Brazil?
Well, I think it's going to be very tough for Germany. I think Brazil have home advantage. I think you see it in some of the refereeing decisions, the crowd really firing them up, and Germany will have to dig deep to cope with that. Having said that, I think Brazil can play one way, and that's one way only. That's through Neymar. They don't strike me as a complete team. I think Germany have more layers. They're by no means the perfect side. They have vulnerability as well. And it remains to be seen whether they can play such a high line against somebody like Neymar up front. But I would cautiously feel optimistic about Germany's chances. This is not a Brazil that looks invincible.
Rafa, special stuff as ever. Look forward to catching up with you again soon there in Rio de Janeiro.
Okay.
World Cup Football Daily with AC Jimbo.
Yep, Germany's through to their fourth straight semi-final. Mrs. Nasri went to tweeting after the final whistle. What did she say? Ooh, that's why you take your world-class players with you.
That's funny, actually. That was exactly what Paul Doyle was saying downstairs.
Right. Oh, yeah.
Has anybody ever seen Mrs. Nasri and Paul Doyle in the same room? Could they be one and the same person?
Wow.
I'd love that to be true. that would be extraordinary. She got a lot of abuse for that, though, didn't she, on Twitter?
Well, she tends to fire off incendiary tweets, doesn't she? That's her shtick.
She's a woman of spirit. I admire that. Super. Anyway, so there you go. Germany beat France comfortably at the end of the day, and they're going to face Brazil. And on Saturday, four more teams facing off for a spot in the other semi-final. The other big event, though, on Friday, although I suppose event is stretching it as a term, is the word that it's almost set for Luis Suarez to go to Barcelona. It's remarkable how quickly all this has taken place, almost as if it was pretty much groundwork was already there sorted anyway. Somebody was pointing out, though, on Twitter, It's also remarkable how this is a player who's banned from all football activities, signing for a club who are banned from all transfer activities.
Married, made in heaven.
Yeah. Yeah. Anyway, right, a little bit of this and then that.
So this is the bit of the podcast you can skip or hum loudly over my voice until I stop talking. We've got a brand new Guardian Football channel on YouTube, which is home to all kinds of original video content, including a daily news show out every lunchtime, filling you in on all the best and funniest press and social media reaction to the night before, as well as previews of all the big games with a range of special guests. Check out youtube.com/Guardian Football.
Argentina, Belgium, Brazil's noisy neighbours. They're going to be cranking up the volume against the Rouge Devils. Hey, James.
They are. Alejandro Sabella was talking today about them being more than just a team built around Lionel Messi.
Oh, yeah.
When we haven't seen anything to suggest that thus far. He made a point that their goal against Switzerland came not from Messi, but from Rodrigo Palacio.
Right.
Who stole the ball in midfield, gave it to Messi, and had created the space for him, who then gave it to Angel Di Maria. So they're more than just being about Lionel Messi. But I don't know. I think...
But they kind of are all about... Absolutely, when you watch the games, it's always Messi who sorts it out.
Well, that's the thing. I mean, it doesn't really ring true. I think those words were quite hollow for Isabella. I think so far... It's looking like it's up to Messi to win this tournament for them, because there are issues in terms of what's their best formation. They went into this tournament 4-3-3 was. He played 3-5-2, went back to 4-3-3, didn't really work. They then played 4-4-2. Higuain hasn't played, had a particularly good tournament. Aguero has had a muscle injury.
Mm-hmm.
Their centre-back partnership, I mean, Federico Fernandez doesn't look like a... hasn't been a good player for Napoli all season. Doesn't look like a good player for Argentina. So they're a very flawed team.
What about Sergio Rojo and the fact he's going to be out?
I think there's been four players for Argentina who've been decent, and he's been one of them.
Mm.
He contributed prior to Di Maria's goal, one of the only goal that hadn't been scored by Messi. And yeah, he was. I think coming into this tournament, he was a bit of a left field choice for a left fullback, and I think he's earned his place. He's done really well, so yeah, that will be a bit of a blow to lose him.
Last time these two teams faced was also in the quarterfinals of the 1986 World Cup, and I imagine that must be where that famous photograph of Maradona with it. Oh, it's not.
No, that's from 82.
Oh, that's from 82. So you've got Maradona and about eight Belgians who are trying to...
Can we debunk that myth?
Well, they're not, but the photo says that.
The photo, and it's a brilliant, iconic photo, and it's wonderful, and I do like it, but it is a wall that's just kind of crumbling away and reorganising itself.
Right.
It's not Maradona facing six Belgian defenders.
Take them on your own.
What's the best way to combat this? Oh, I think we'll just line up, shall we?
Yeah. It's,
it reminds me a little bit of the Iniesta photo.
Yes.
From, was it 2010 or 2008, when he's surrounded by Italian defenders, kind of symbolising, you know, the tiki-taka and all the rest of it. But he hasn't got the ball. Chiellini's about to lump it away. So, it's a beautiful picture, but it's what it represents rather than what it's actually showing.
I'm just wondering if we're going to see similar scenes tomorrow with the Messi in the Maradona role and, well, Belgium in the Belgium one.
Well, the defence has been great so far in this tournament. Courtois has... With Neuer, I think, proven himself to be, you know, the outstanding goalkeeper in the world.
What about Keylor Navas?
Well, yes. These little upstarts.
Mm.
They've
producer Ben's here, Tim Howard.
Tim, oh.
Anyway.
I still think these are these are the genuine elite who have, you know, shown themselves to be of that standing in the Champions League as well. Their back four has been great. They haven't conceded a goal in, 90 minutes since the first game against Algeria. It's going to be a stern test. I think it'll be interesting to see how they go about stopping Messi, whether they do decide to have a sort of man on him, like an Axel Witsel or something like that. But considering... some of the flaws we've seen in this Argentina side, I thought Belgium's last game was their most encouraging when they went forward. They looked better going forward in the game against the US than they had in any of their group games. I think they're perhaps beginning to click in that sense, which is timely.
Mark Wilmot saying, worry about Messi, let Argentina worry about us. And you'd go along with that, would you? What do you think, John?
I agree with James. I think it's still slightly hard to tell how good Belgium are, given the group they've come through, and we still, you know, it looked like a weak group, and then Algeria turned up, and actually maybe it's not quite as weak as we thought. And in the whole kind of the post-USA match was kind of everybody got obsessed a little bit with the USA's performance and Tim Howard in particular. But the fact that he had to make so many saves was because Belgium were getting through time and time again. And their finishing was just, you know, wasn't as good as it might have been. So, yeah.
Time for Hazard to take this tournament by the scruff of his neck.
Quite possibly, yeah. Mm. Who knows? But it's probably the quarterfinal that I'm looking forward to most, I would say.
Why?
I don't know what to expect.
Which was the quarterfinal you were looking forward to least?
Well, I was going to say Holland Costa Rica, but yeah, shall I say Holland Costa Rica?
Go
just
on,
to make it easy for
and then we'll segue
I'm
on to
a
that.
Segue.
Yeah, Holland Costa Rica or Netherlands, as people are saying nowadays, Netherlands Costa Rica, and of course the winner of that gets to face whoever wins out of Argentina and Belgium, and that game will be in Sao Paulo, I think, on the Wednesday. What's it going to be then? Netherlands, the great footballing side still searching for its first World Cup win, or the extraordinary Cinderella story of this tournament, Costa Rica? Well, let's now dial up our Costa Rican journalist chum Eddie Mendez to see what he's made of Los Ticos' extraordinary tournament so far. Eddie, delighted you can join us again. Last time you were on, it was just after Costa Rica had beaten Italy, and you said, wow, anything from here is fine. We're playing with house money. Anything that comes is good. It's pretty amazing how far you've got.
Yes, I actually wouldn't have expected before the World Cup to make it to a quarterfinal. I think the matchup with Greece, as I said before, would have been ideal for us, and it took us about 45 minutes, but I think we had them figured out. Should have been awarded a penalty, would have been up comfortably 2-0, and I think maybe the complexion of that match would have been different. So I would have expected to beat Greece to get to the quarterfinal, but before the World Cup, to actually see this stage right now, to see Costa Rica play probably one of the best three teams in the World Cup in the Netherlands, it's been a dream come true.
All right, okay, well, the next bit sounds a bit difficult because you've got to stop Iron Robin.
Yes, that's going to be the main focus for Jorge Luis Pinto. A lot of people are assuming that maybe Costa Rica is going to sit deep. But I still, given what Pinto's been saying, it's going to be the same aggressive high line. He's going to try and close spaces out in the midfield with the head up being the disruptive force. And I think they're a motivated bunch and they're ready to go toe-to-toe. The main thing is going to be putting pressure on Arjen Robben the minute he gets his foot on the ball, because if you give him a pocket of space and he's running toe-to-toe with Junior Diaz, that's a matchup he's going to like to exploit. So it all depends on how quickly we can pressure that ball, and then our high line keeping Robin Van Persie and make sure that he never beats our offside trap.
Mm. It's been working really well at the back so far. Only two goals conceded, one of those a penalty. But the fact that Oscar Duarte is out, how much of a difference does that make to Costa Rica?
It's a huge loss. Duarte did have problems in 1v1 defending. I actually thought Greece was going to be able to exploit that. I didn't think it would be to the point where he would get sent off because of untimely challenges. And credit to Greece for really exploiting that. I thought that would have been our weak spot in that matchup. But for Duarte to be out for this one, Roy Miller was another center-back option of ours that probably would have gotten a start, but he's suffering from a muscle injury in his left leg. So he's ruled out of the World Cup, and that puts in Johnny Acosta, who doesn't have the same pace as Duarte. He's typically out of position more often than not. He was actually caught ball watching on the equalizer from Greece when he was subbed in late in the second half of that game. So it's a matchup that the Netherlands should look to exploit. I think if there was ever a time for Louis van Gaal to come out in a 4-3-3 instead of his favored 5-3-2, maybe even give somebody like Memphis the pie a start, I think this would be the matchup, because Johnny Acosta at right center back, he's just right for the picking. It's something that the Netherlands really should focus the majority of their attack on.
Mm. As you say, with 10 men for a lot of the game with Greece, this journey that Costa Rica have been on and the the emotions, I guess, and also the draining conditions they've had to play in at times. How much have they got left in them, do you think?
Legs, probably not so much, but there's plenty of heart in this team. They, given their sound bites and everything I've been reading, the players are just absolutely confident, and they are by no means shying away from this stiff challenge that's going to be the Netherlands. Whether their legs can keep up with their heart is ultimately going to decide their fate. You know, you play 120 minutes, 100 grueling minutes. You see after the match, the players are crying. It's emotionally draining. And then to turn around after such a major high and then play somebody of the quality of the Netherlands, it's kind of a tall order. I don't think they're going to shy away from it, but I don't think it's going to be one that they'll be able to overcome either.
All right. Is Joe Campbell fit?
As fit as a strapping 22-year-old man should be.
Okay.
He had high. You could see it at the end of that match. He was just left alone on the island. Pinto, you know, went out with a conservative back four, and then Brian Ruiz kind of tucked back into the midfield and just left Campbell out alone in the island. And to be able to still have the legs, though, to take such a confident penalty, and I think he was the third one to go for Costa Rica, it just shows you that he could always dig down deep when he needs to, and he's just going to have to dig for about 90 minutes this time.
Okay. Eddie, are you going to break the bank again?
I don't want to say Costa Rica is going to win because I can't.
Yeah.
Analytically, I can't get myself to say that.
Right.
My heart is with the team, and I think it's all going to depend on what tactic Van Hawk is going to deploy. If he comes out in a 5-3-2, I think Costa Rica is going to be able to squeeze the midfield a little bit, close the spaces, and that, you know, keep up with that aggressive high line. We've drawn more teams offside than any other team in this tournament. I think it's a total of 28 times. Greece alone was offside 10 times in the last matchup. If Van Hall comes out guns a blazing in a 4-3-3 and really runs at us with pace down the channels, I think Cinderella goes home. But I can't get myself to say Costa Rica's going to win this match. I actually think Netherlands win maybe 2-1.
World Cup Football Daily with James Richardson.
Eddie Mendes. What a battle of the managers this game's set to be. Pinto on the one hand and Van Gaal on the other.
Well, yeah, you'd think Van Gaal heading off to Manchester United after the tournament. Got to have a few mind games up his sleeve. But I was quite impressed with Pinto really getting his point across in the press conference today when talking about Robin. And a journalist asked him about diving, and he replied that it's one of the most important questions I've been asking in this World Cup, diving. This is something that makes us worry a lot. We're really worried about that. I would like to ask FIFA and the referees to watch Robin closely. We're really worried about diving. And he goes on in this vein for quite a long time. Somebody points out, you know, do you want a referee to book him for diving? And Pinto replies, well, that might be the most logical solution. Maybe he will have to leave the field because he gets two yellow cards for diving. Why not? Yeah, he's making sure those seeds are sown in the referee's mind.
Well, yeah, but I wonder if they already are, because after what Robin said very candidly, that yeah, he did kind of half dive on a couple of occasions, I think he admitted, in the last 16 game, I suspect that the referees are going to be paying particular attention to him. That could have a massive impact on this game, because he has been the difference for Holland so far. Netherlands.
Yeah, he's been huge. And he's a tremendous player to watch. I mean, I know he splits opinions a little bit, but I love watching Iron Robin play when he's on his game. He's the sort of player that will try 10 things and three of them come off, or one of them comes off, but it's worth watching just for that one or those couple of times that it works. So yeah, I mean they are reliant on him, and you wonder if with all the attention on him, does it time for somebody else to step to the fore? Van Persie,
that's perhaps interesting. Or Wesley Sneijder.
Well, Sneijder's already had his moment.
One moment. It won't be De Jong stepping forward, because he's got a torn groin muscle, so he's not doing any stepping at the moment.
Yeah, and I think that loss is a significant one, because yeah, many people, when they think of Nigel De Jong, they think thug.
Oh, yeah.
They think Stuart Holden, Hatton Ben Arfa, they think that challenge on Xabi Alonso.
Mm.
But yeah, there's more to him than being a destroyer.
Yeah.
Yeah, he is a builder of play. I mean, anyone who's watched him at Milan this year, he's been one of the few players who kind of can leave this season with his head held high. He actually starts moves. Yeah, he's not let's not beat around the bush. He's not like a Xabi Alonso in terms of, you know, being able to really run a game. But yeah, he's a better player than people give him credit for.
Great quote here. Elko Born was tweeting about Louis van Gaal. He said apparently this week, Nigel de Jong was head of incidental pressing. It's not easy to replace him. He has characteristics others don't have. What does that mean, John?
What is incidental
pressing?
No
idea. I guess is it something to do with gegenpressing, where it's not comprehensive pressing, it's selective pressing.
Coincidental pressing.
I don't know. But that's what De Jong did anyway, so you're not going to see any of that in the game. All right, Superboy is quite an exciting clash, isn't it? History, I mean, in terms of pedigree, you would say Netherlands, no? But who do you think is going to be facing each other then in the semi-final on Wednesday?
I think it'll be Holland-Argentina.
Mm.
Just to be devil's advocate, let's say Costa Rica. Because, I mean, they've
against?
Got... Belgium.
Yeah.
Okay. Because, yeah, they've got nothing to lose. They've got nothing to fear either. I mean, they've beaten Italy. They've beaten Uruguay. They drew against England. They've got...
They couldn't even score against England.
Yeah, but I mean, they're a real threat from set pieces. I mean, they scored ahead against Italy. They scored from set pieces against Uruguay. They are, with Chile, I think, a really awkward team.
Hmm.
As Eddie was saying, they catch you offside all the time.
Yeah.
They're a frustrating one to play against.
Well, there you go. Opinion very much divided here at Guardian World Cup Football Daily. But we'll get our answers soon enough. Saturday night, we'll be back, the reaction to those two quarterfinals. So do make sure you join us then. In the meantime, many thanks to producer Ben, James Horncastle, John Ashton, and you, listener. Have a great Saturday.
World Cup Football Daily, just like being in Brazil.
Support for this Guardian podcast comes from Squarespace. With World Cup fever taking over, we at The Guardian are pretty sure that you're thinking big too. So maybe now is the time to use Squarespace to create your own professional website for your small business, portfolio, or blog. It's easy. You could create your own site during halftime. Just go to squarespace.com to start your free trial. And to support this podcast, use the offer code Guardian to get 10% off.